Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday. Nate Geary here, hanging out with you for the next 2 hours. We are hoping to grab Mike Tenier of the New York Times and Pro Football Network. So we'll wait on that for a moment here and get you some updates on any of the most recent breaking NFL news, which I know everyone's kind of clamoring at, considering today is roster cutdown day across the NFL. Obviously, today, news coming out of Houston, Deshaun Watson signing a four-year, $160 million extension to his contract, which makes him the second highest-paid quarterback in football, right behind Patrick Mahomes. Adam Schefter reports today that the Patriots have released running back Lamar Miller, who was signed in the offseason, former Houston Texan and Miami Dolphin, no longer in New England Patriots camp. The Falcons have also released former Minnesota first-round pick Laquan Treadwell. He was signed in the offseason after a disappointing beginning of his career in Minnesota. He'll be looking for gainful employment again, so we'll see if the former first-round pick can lock on anywhere. And then, let's see, any other interesting notes so far to report? Not much outside of, wow, okay, Washington has waived Trey Quinn. That's an interesting one. Trey Quinn, the former SMU player, pretty darn good, and that offense needs as many weapons as you can get, so you wouldn't think he'd be getting waived by Washington, but here we are. All right, let's go to the Western Hotline now because Mike Tenier joins me on the Western Hotline. First and foremost, good afternoon, Mike. Good to have you. Thanks for joining me. And hey, congrats on your first 2 weeks of new employment for you over at Pro Football Network. And obviously some great pieces coming out this week. That's why I got you on to talk. So congratulations, man.
Thank you very much. And yeah, fans will be able to find me every Monday at Pro Football Network. And if they head over there now, last week's stuff, including a Buffalo Bills preview, is there. And then some NFC stuff will be dropping this week. And then the following week, we'll be able to talk about real football games, which will be very exciting.
I'll tell you, you know, you don't necessarily take for granted NFL football right up until the fact that it's in question. And I know a lot of people without preseason. Isn't it funny, though, most of us complain as like to almost ad nauseum about how awful preseason football is and how it's been taken away and how almost universally it's being clamored for to be brought back.
Yeah. And you know what? There was playoff basketball available to those who were interested, and playoff hockey, et cetera, which isn't usually available in August. And yet I know for me personally, it was like, you know, the rhythm of August and these Thursday night games, and they're pretty terrible, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, but that's my job, and that's your job. Like, we have to watch the games. And I always wonder why fans are like, man, these games are so terrible. They're so terrible. Watch the first quarter, then go do something else, or turn the sound down and read a book or play a video game and watch the rookies or whatever. You don't have to watch it. Now that it's gone, I personally missed all of the dramas of, oh, quarterback controversy, or, oh, the seventh-round pick caught 8 passes in the fourth quarter. Is he the next Jerry Rice? All that stuff is fun. You don't have to be glued to your TV to enjoy it. You can enjoy it kind of as a hot stove league. And absolutely, I really missed all those elements of preseason this year.
Not only that, but, you know, getting to know some of these guys now that are being cut, I think is actually kind of a fun part of it is, you know, figuring out who these people are and learning about their stories. And you know, that's definitely something I miss about the preseason, is better understanding some of these young guys that, you know, undoubtedly are going to be looking for work. I know here in Buffalo, you know, there's a couple of guys that got cut today over the last couple of days. Andre Smith, a guy that the Bills had actually traded a conditional seventh round pick for, who found his way on the street. But I, from what we're seeing, I'm getting the sense that the Bills kind of had a plan in place for Andre Smith to kind of maybe move him to the practice squad, you know, at some point here. But Mike, the first thing I wanted to talk to you about was your article that you put out this week about Josh Allen. I thought it was really interesting, some of the quotes that I pulled from it and kind of tweeted out. So going into the season, Mike, obviously all eyes are on Josh Allen. There's no question that the Bills have one of the, you know, out of the box, they kind of come prepackaged as one of the more deep and talented teams across all of the league, which I'll tell you, as a person who's been a Bills fan for a long time, who, you know, works and covers the team for Bills games all year long, it is weird to say that that roster is what it is at this point because it's very, very good. It's also very, very deep. But this whole season, it falls on the back of one guy, and it's their third-year quarterback. And I'm wondering, and I kind of got a good feeling from it from your piece, but I am wondering just how much that pressure in your experience can have a negative or positive effect on the sort of development of a quarterback. I think we saw the negative side last year of Mitch Trubisky. But I do think that there are several cases that, you know, when you are surround a young quarterback with a lot of talent, but also put the pressure on him, that you can create that diamond with that pressure. So I'm interested in your thoughts about, you know, Josh Allen heading into year three and just how important of a season it is for him.
You know, the pressure is what it's supposed to be. You know, the pressure on Josh Allen is exactly the level of pressure at NFL quarterback has to handle. Last year, first year, rookie year, no expectations. You get brought in. Second year, you have some surprisingly positive results. You reach the playoffs. Third year, the expectations are higher. That's the standard progression. He's not, nothing realistic's being put on him. He's not being overly coddled. So you know, you'll see in the history of NFL guys who wilt under it, see guys who really respond to it, and then there are just a lot of quarterbacks who were just guys. They just float along with it and did what they were supposed to do. And the fault or the credit goes, you know, partly to them and their own convictions and things, but to the roster around them, to the coaching staff around them. And that's where I think Josh Allen potentially has a big advantage here, is that the team also followed the logical step each time along the way. Last year was more about getting depth, getting defense, getting the offensive line in place. This year, it's let's make the big, bold trade. Let's get the big wide receiver. Let's get that extra weapon. Let's adjust things a little bit with other elements of the offense and receiving core. And the added benefit of the powerhouse of the division falling what appears to be by the wayside a little bit. So all of these things are in place. Josh Allen has never struck me as the guy who's going to be like, oh, my God, expectations have gotten somewhat higher. That's it for me. I'm going belly up. I'm going to buy five Porsches or any of those types of things. That doesn't seem like the guy he is. All the structures in place for him. Now it's not necessarily about, you know, what's in his metal and what's in his convictions and capabilities mentally, but like, is the footwork going to be good? Are the deep passes going to sail on him? Yeah, once in a while, that wacky decision, is that going to go away? That often goes away for a third-year quarterback. So those are the things I'm looking at. Can he take those next steps that will make him legitimately like a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback, or will we see a guy who sort of backslides a little bit? Because that's where you do see in the past, you've definitely seen your Mitch Trubisky types take that back slide in that third year.
So that kind of leads me to my next question about Allen, but it's not directly about Allen, Mike. It's about the offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll. And, you know, and I'll throw you a tidbit here. The Bills obviously yesterday put their fullback, Patrick DeMarco, on season-ending IR, meaning at the moment they don't have a fullback on the roster, Mike. And say what you will, the quarterback could be widely considered as he doubles as a fullback. He is one of the most physical runners in the league, and he plays the quarterback position. But that also means to me that there's going to be a lot of 10 and 11 personnel in this offense. And I'm wondering your thoughts about an offense that's run by Brian Daboll that won't have a fullback in it, that's being run by Josh Allen. I don't want to say I'm like looking into the future or something here, but like, it is nice to be in a spot here in this radio station talking about an offense who is going to be running mostly spread. I am excited about that, and I just wonder from a fit perspective, do you think that's the best way to use Josh Allen?
Well, I think it was you who tweeted yesterday, we're living in the future. There's no fullback. and I spotted that, and it's like, yes, welcome to 1996.
Yeah.
You know, welcome to the current. In fact, Pujols are coming back, and the Bills are going away from it, so it might still be a couple of years behind there. But it doesn't necessarily mean mostly spread. I mean, you might be seeing a lot of 12 personnel. I think you've got some pretty good tight ends there. You might see a lot of constricted formations. Certainly, the Rams don't use a fullback very much at all, and yet they kind of constrict the formations and all. But I think what you're not going to see is as much training wheels. I think sometimes when I see the I formation with Josh Allen or some other younger quarterbacks, it's like they're just turtling up and they want to run on first down, run on second down, and hope it's third and two. I think that they're going to get away from that. Now, that being said, I'm not the biggest Brian Daboll fan. He's one of those coordinators who always seems to finish 22nd or 23rd in the league in offense and then get the next job, in part because defensive-oriented coaches like him, because it's all about ball control and handing off on second and 10 and all the things defensive coordinators like, because they want their defense to go win the game. That said, he's going to be working within a framework he's comfortable with. He didn't wake up one morning and say, hey, five wide receivers, I'm Cliff Kingsbury now, let's do this. That's not how he's going to go. He's opening up the system on his terms. And I don't want to be the guy who comes on these shows and starts talking continuity, because there's no offseason.
Thank God.
You do have the you do have the continuity there. The changes are being made with a structure that's in place with coaches and people who are using the same language, terminology, and ever and all. So that will be a benefit as they try to open things up a little bit.
You know, it's funny, Mike, because I think if I were to bring 10 people on this show that look at the NFL from a national perspective and report on it from a national perspective, I would probably bet that 9 of the 10 would have glowing reviews of Brian Daboll. And I find it super interesting that you're kind of falling under that 10% category, because frankly, I think I fall in that percentage with you. I think for the most part, people have given Brian Daboll the benefit of the doubt over the course of his career because of the quarterback play that he's had. He's had Matt Moore. He's had Brady Quinn in Kansas City, for God's sakes. He's Tyler Thigpen. Like, the quarterbacks that have played in his system while he's been the main play caller have not been impressive. So, you know, and frankly, Mike, he had been the topic of conversation in terms of potential head coaching vacancies this offseason. So, in your estimation, is this a guy this year that the excuses have been fully pulled out from underneath him? He definitely has the best quarterback he's ever had in his system. He by far has the best, stable of weapons he's ever had as an offensive play caller. And I guess this is kind of a backdoor question for you, but if they do succeed, and this is a top 12 unit, which by the way, Mike, if they're not a top 12 unit, this is going to be a major disappointment on this offensive side of the ball. We've been waiting for a top 12, top 10 unit for a long time. This is the first time they have the players to do it. Do you think he's a legitimate head coaching candidate if they are a top 12 unit this year?
He'll be a legitimate head coaching candidate if the team gets to that level for a variety of reasons, whether or not it's because of his stellar performance developing Josh Allen. I'm sure we'll talk about that, but when your resume has New England Patriots and Alabama Crimson Tide on it and you succeed, you're going to be a top head coaching candidate. That's how it's going to go. I know he was talking about last year. I don't want to play too much inside baseball on this, but there's people who rise to the top of the head coach candidate list are often people who are very good at networking. Whether their agent makes sure that the agents of high profile people on television and et cetera know how great the guy is, or they've been so good at like making friends within the coaching ranks and they've made so many friends among the Bill Belichick school and the Nick Saban schools, et cetera, that they keep rising up. But that's often the case. Now, that sounds like I'm being really negative on Daboll, maybe more than I want to be, but there's a reason a guy like him, when he fails, we are reminded that, oh, Thigpen was the quarterback that year. Or, this other guy was the quarterback this year. I often wonder, it's like, well, isn't the great coach supposed to have, like, found a diamond in the rough somewhere along the way there, and had success that wasn't Patriot success / Alabama Crimson Tide success? All that said, leaving aside, obviously if they succeed this year, that's a success on his resume. That will probably move him forward into that set of candidates. At the same time, if there is this massive drop-off, if there's this failure here along the way, he'll be one of the guys who might be fired as a result of that disappointment. And you know what we'll hear when he gets the next offensive coordinator job? Well, he didn't have a chance in Buffalo.
Yeah.
Josh Allen was his quarterback, and look how that turned out. So I'll just leave that there.
Mike Tenier here on the Western Hotline. Mike's a the NFL national writer for Pro Football Network 365. No, listen, it's funny because – it's true. And it's funny because it's carbon copied over every disappointing offensive coordinator across football for all of time. It's just that is the built-in excuse that you make for play callers. And that's just plain and simple of it. And I think this is a really good transition into talking about the Jacksonville Jaguars, frankly, because the Jaguars are a team who have decided, okay, well, we are going to turn to our young quarterback, who, by the way, we kind of like, but also we're not going to surround him with a fighting chance to really show us what he's capable of being in the NFL. Therefore, more than likely, we're going to be in a position to draft one of either Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence. With that being said, doesn't it feel like Doug Marrone should have been fired last year and then the year before that? And maybe, frankly, the year before that? Or is this just a situation where you're talking about a lame duck coach where you don't want a new head coach being put in a situation where you know if you're David Caldwell, for whatever reason, you're getting your umpteenth time to draft quarterbacks and return over the roster? I mean, David Caldwell's gotten three rebuild opportunities, for God's sakes. So, like, if you're David Caldwell and you know you're getting that fourth opportunity, you probably don't want to put, I don't know, a young coach in a position to basically say, we're tanking in your first year. Instead, we'll just throw Doug Marrone out there, and then next year we'll find somebody we actually care about.
Well, there's a lot there. there's a lot to that. And one of them is, you know, if you put the young coach out there, you can say, well, this is your rebuilding year. If you put Doug Marrone out there, he will operate at cross purposes to that sort of rebuilding, get desperate and be like, oh, you know, let me find some veteran and put him out there, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a reason you don't put a lame duck in charge of the rebuilding program. It's just that's not what he's going to be doing that year. Now, why the lamest of all lame ducks, general manager David Caldwell, is put in charge of anything at this point in the NFL is beyond me. So you've got an organization that I think I know from the top, and I've heard from the top, that their plan this year was to cut the losses of the past. They looked at the mistakes of the past, and that included everything from Nick Foles to some of the guys they brought in who they had branded as malcontents, who really were just guys who were looking for their next contract and might have gotten into fights with Marrone on the sideline because Marrone can be difficult to deal with. Get rid of all these things and start over, and you know, eat the cap space this year. Should eat the cap space and get the draft picks for the future and go like a rebuilding, like a Moneyball type of rebuilding. And my question that I never got to ask was, well, then why the general manager who made those mistakes was still in charge? And the impression I get is that a lot of blame was put on Tom Coughlin. Now, there were actual grievances from ballplayers against Tom Coughlin because he would try to order them to come for rehab in the facility. Even though that's voluntary, you don't have to come for rehab in the facility when you're injured, and then he would fine them. So there are things we know that sounds like Tom Coughlin. That sounds like something he would do, and so that blame gets put on him, fine. There's a lot of things there that sound like they were blamed on Tom Coughlin that were not Tom Coughlin's decisions, coach and general manager decisions, and they blamed it on the guy on the way out the door to keep their jobs. And that's the impression I get in Jacksonville. And, you know, that's a long answer, and it's very, again, inside baseball-y type answer that leads to a team on the field that has no plan this year except to sort of take the year off for tax purposes and hide and hope that they score big in the draft next year.
All right, so I gave you a lot to unpack in that last question. I'm going to do the exact opposite on this one. And all I'm going to say is New York Jets.
Oh.
And then I'm going to ask you to then just go to town.
Okay. Adam Gase is in charge. Adam Gase excels at creating obstacles in the way of his success that give him an opportunity to keep his job. That is one of the things he is good at. Same thing with Caldwell. I mean, we're kind of going through a tour of this. Like, the head coach obviously wants to win. He's obviously got a big ego. But the moment there's something in place that says, well, this is going to require another year or two of rebuilding, he takes it. So I know Joe Douglas is the general manager there. Some of the moves, like trading for Kalen Ballage, and then he fails a physical. Like, these are Adam Gase moves, like all the way. So you got a team that has waved the surrender flag. They got rid of Jamal Adams. They've gotten rid of some other guys. They got rid of Brian Winter, some other guys in the offensive line. They're waving the surrender flag. They're declaring this a rebuilding year, and it's real similar to what we just did in Jacksonville, where it's like, oh, well, that must have been a past mistake, and it's year two, year three, whatever the year is of the regime, and now we're rebuilding. And it's not good management. It's not good football. It's a great way, though, to keep your job 3, 4, 5 years when you don't accomplish anything, because then the owner comes and says, why was the team bad? And it's like, oh, we had all these mistakes we had to correct. We had to rebuild for 2 years. And it works until the owner figures it out. And sometimes the owners in England or the owners in Ireland or someplace else, and we've seen a couple examples of that now, and you get a couple of years before it gets figured out.
Mike Tenier here on the West Her Hotline. They are such an interesting it's sort of like, you know, when there's an eclipse and you know you're not supposed to look directly into it, but right. if you do, you're supposed to go blind. And even though you know the chance of going blind is high, you still need to look directly into the light. It's kind of like watching them. And frankly, you know, the Bills play that team in week one, and I think it's a very interesting test for the Bills because, in your opinion, like, the Bills can't walk into that game without winning by at least 21 points and expect to have respect for the rest of the season. I'm sorry. Like, that's the situation at play right now, is the Bills need not only – they've scored 5 games last year, Mike. They scored more than 21 points on offense. Mm-hmm. Week one, they actually came out and they threw the ball a ton last year in New York. Mm-hmm. And frankly, they didn't have a ton of success. They turned the ball over a lot. And I think that's really probably why Brian Daboll scrapped a lot of what he wanted to do early and wanted to pass the ball a lot. But like, you need to go in at home against this New York Jets team and win by 21 points, right? I mean, at least.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to put a score on it, but it's got to be this convincing win. If you go up by 14, 17 points, and then you run the ball for the fourth quarter because that's the way your mentality is, we'd all see it. We'd all recognize that's what it is there. But if you're in a nip-and-tuck game with the Jets early on, and remember, the same thing will be happening. The Patriots will be playing the Dolphins, and the Dolphins are in rebuilding mode, and they're going to have all rookies and things out there. If you're going to nip-and-tuck game against the Jets, and then, you know, Cam Newton has this easy win, for the Patriots, you know what the storyline is going to be, and I think that doubt can seep into the team as well. That they've been looking up at this other team, and they're still there, and you're still kind of like scrapping among the little sisters of the poor at the bottom of the division. So you definitely want that. That said, you should get that. I look at that Jets roster, and I am stunned. I am stunned that this is a roster that was put together that money has been spent on. That, you know, doesn't have Jamal Adams anymore, does not have a pass rusher that I would consider an impact pass rusher, is unbelievably short on receivers. Mm. And so, you know, you should be able to throw the ball against them because Allen should be able to sit in the pocket and wait for the world to change. You know, and that's how that game should go, and that's how I anticipate it's going to go. But then the concern will come in if it doesn't go that way, and I think fans will have that concern. Us in the national world will be like, that's interesting. And the team itself could start having to look at itself if that's the case.
All right, Mike. First and foremost, tell the folks where they can find all your work now that you've changed teams and updated all of your resume. Let the people know where they can find your work.
Now, you can find me a lot of places, folks, but I'm going to start right now at Pro Football Network, and you just type that into Google Go and bookmark the page. They've got a little cartoon of me. They've got a little section for me. You can find that every Monday. I'll be rocking all kinds of, season or week in review type stuff there. That's Pro Football Network. You'll also be able to find me midweek at the New York Times, and you'll also be able to find me on Thursday at my old stomping grounds at Football Outsiders. Game previews for the upcoming week on Thursdays at Football Outsiders. Of course, check Football Outsiders no matter what because there's so much stuff during the week. So that's Pro Football Network and Football Outsiders. Oh, yeah, and the New York Times, but they don't need me to – you know who they are. So.
Imagine if you didn't like football. Like, that would be that would be weird, right? Like,
if I was doing this for soccer, I'd be miserable. I'd go back to teaching eighth grade. That's what I'd be doing again. I wouldn't be doing this any other sport in the world but the NFL.
All right, my friend. Hey, as always, thanks for being so generous with your time and coming on and talking candidly about so many topics. I really appreciate it, man, and looking forward to all the work you'll be putting in this season, and I'm hoping to talk soon.
You got it. Take care, and then let's enjoy some football this year.
Let's enjoy some football. Thanks, Mike.
You got it.
Mike Tenier there of, as you heard it, Pro Football Network, Football Outsiders, and the New York Times. You can catch him on Twitter at Mike Tenier. Okay, quick timeout. Mike Catalana, my man. We're going to talk a little bit more Bills football. That's coming up next. 1 o'clock, you're going to hear from Sean McDermott. Then at 1:15, we're going to hear from Todd Height. And then at 1:30, you're going to hear from Josh Allen. So we've got a lot of Bills and Kentucky Derby coverage coming up next here on WGR. We'll be right back. Okay, all, welcome back. Sports Talk Saturday continuing on here. A long day, it seems like it's already been. Let's talk a little bit about, quickly before we go to Mike Catalana on the Western Hotline, looking at some of the latest news on some of the roster moves across the league. The New York Jets have released a wide receiver. Give me a moment on his name. He's one of their backup receivers. That's the best I got for you on that one. Obviously, if you miss it this hour, Deshaun Watson re-signs with the Houston Texans. Not re-signs, but signs a contract extension. A four-year, $160 million contract in Houston. Let's go to the Western Hotline now, because as I mentioned, my man Mike Catalana, 13 Wham sports director, joining me now on the Western Hotline. First and foremost, Mike, happy football season to you, my friend. It is good to talk to you, and I hope you had a nice summer, because it's basically over starting on Monday. So, welcome.
It is, but I love this time of the year, right? It's just a little cool in the air. It makes you think football. It's been weird, because as much as we all complain about the preseason, and I did those games for 18 years for the Bills, it was a different experience for me, but I got it the way it was in the preseason. I missed it this year. I missed seeing something. I missed seeing game action leading up to a game, but we're going to jump right into it coming up, I guess, Thursday, and then certainly for the Bills next Sunday.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Kind of funny, though. I was just saying this to my previous guest, Mike Tenier from Pro Football Network. I was saying to him, it's like, you know, for years and years and years, all most of us do is complain about these preseason games, how long, drawn out, and terrible. Can we have a running clock? You know, is like some feedback of these games. And yet, without them, it's kind of, we're all kind of wrecks, to be honest.
Yeah, and the thing about the preseason was, if you compare them to regular games, it was terrible, right? Because I used to tell people, the difference between a preseason game and a regular game is a regular game gets more important as the clock winds down, and a preseason game gets less important. But there was a value to seeing it. Like, we get excited when they're going to do live scrimmaging, right? Because it's at least a chance to see these guys. But no preseason, I think, is having a very big impact on what's going on today and over this next week in terms of teams evaluating their own guys and evaluating guys in other camps.
A quick note here from Jay Skirsky from the Buffalo News. A league source tells the Buffalo News the Bills have released offensive lineman Brandon Walden, but the team would like to re-sign him to the practice squad if he clears waivers. So that's a quick update on another Bills waiver. So, Mike, let's talk about the Bills. Obviously, there are some interesting moves so far. I would say mostly everything but one move has been all but pretty, I don't know, pretty easily predicted. The one I find most interesting isn't necessarily a roster move, but a move to put Patrick DeMarco on the season-ending IR, ending his season, and what could likely end his stint with the Buffalo Bills as his one-year contract ends at the end of this year. What do you believe this offense looks like without Patrick DeMarco, and do you think it's something that maybe we'd been waiting for in this offense, is to get them to air this ball out a little bit more and become less of a run-heavy team and more of a modern 60-40 passing team?
Yeah, I think it's situational for the players you can use. Look, when they brought Pat DeMarco in, he did everything Sean McDermott wanted him to do. I mean, he's impactful when you're trying to run the ball. He was a special teams guy. He's a culture guy, all those things. But I think his value, though, you know, I did hear Mike talk about, you know, or was Bruce maybe talking about when he was used in that opening game and to try to give Josh Allen some reads into what's going on. I get that. But they didn't have the talent that they have at the skill position now, over 2 years ago, certainly, You can legitimately put your five receiver sets if you wanted. You've got tight ends that can catch the ball. You have two backs that I think can energize the offense. So, you know, you listen to the players talk about Brian Daboll's offense, multiple, all these things he can do. The playbook is huge. I think players with a different skill set than a fullback, you can't compare him to other fullbacks. He's a limited player in certain ways. And other teams use fullbacks a little differently, like in San Francisco, players that have different skill sets. But I think it's both a combination of his time was sort of up. He does have an injury. They're changing the offense enough. And I don't think they'll miss the fullback in the offense.
Mike Catalana here of 13 Wham in Fox Sports Rochester joining me on the West Hotline. I agree with you as well, by the way. I wanted to make sure I point that out. I agree that at this point, this offense and where I want it to go didn't necessarily have a fullback heavy presence in the offense. Having said that, I do think there are areas on the field, specifically, you know, fourth and short, on the goal line, near in the red zone, like where I think you can find value in having a fullback. But, you know, how much does Josh Allen's style maybe lend to you saying, as much as you do, is maybe you want to have a battering ram at points during the game, like I think Josh Allen's style likely negates a real need to have that because he is such a physical runner with the ball in his hands.
Yeah, I think for those circumstances that's the case, and let's be honest, they just didn't do it all that often, that lead block at the goal line. I mean, it's less than sometimes people want to make it out to be. There are many times. This is not 20 years ago in the NFL. And I think there are so many multiple formations that they can put on the field. You know, they're going to have circumstances with both these running backs on the field. And you know, obviously, again, now they've added. When you add Stephon Diggs at the top of your wide receiver room and you have these other guys that all have roles, you know, I heard you talking about Isaiah McKenzie. He absolutely has a role. I mean, there's only 11 guys you're putting on the field. I don't see it. I don't see the need for it in this offense, and I'm not surprised. And I think maybe the injury sort of pushed it along, but I think they were leaning in this direction anyhow.
So I think that I want to lead that conversation into wide receivers, and I think this is exactly the same conversation we're having about Patrick DeMarco and what pulling his presence from the offense potentially means to the style of play they want to have. So I think this is a natural progression in that conversation, saying then I think seven receivers does make sense, especially if one of them, i.e. Andre Roberts, is your primary return man. That makes sense to me. Then you're keeping wide receivers because you're going to have a lot of three and four wide receiver sets. We saw what Gabriel Davis has done during this camp. He's a lock. I think more so than not, the building really values Isaiah McKenzie, even if people outside of it maybe don't. So that leaves us kind of with one guy, and that's Isaiah Hodgins, who I think has done enough to earn a spot on the team. So I just named seven guys outside of the top three, you know, that I think all deserve to be on this roster.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think Hodgins is going to be on it. I think it's going to be less players taken by other rosters, you know, by other teams than has been in the past. But I think if you expose him to the wire, I don't know if you get him back. Duke Williams, that may not be the case, right? I mean, you may be able to bring him back. Robert Foster, you may be able to bring him back. I think they're going to look at it that way. The Roberts one is really interesting. I mean, there are certain things I think coaches will give on in terms of positioning, but I do think they're very, you know, it's sort of a relief for a coach. It's a relief to say, I don't have to worry about the return game. I got a guy back there that I trust. I don't need a punt catcher. I mean, I've got a guy back there on those kickoffs, and I'll be fine. And I do think that takes away some stress, if that makes sense. And I think they trust him, and I think that's why they brought him in there. Can he play? Yeah, he has his moments. You know, he's had a couple nice catches in camp. That's great. I think that's a bonus. But I think seven wide receivers, very legitimately the case. And my guess would be a guy like Hodgins is going to be inactive, maybe the majority of the season. But I don't think they're exposing him. I'm saying this. We got 3 hours plus left that might happen. But I don't think they're exposing him to the waiver wire.
Mike Catalana here from 13 WAM Rochester on the Wester Hotline. Let's go to defense because we've been talking a lot about offense, and rightfully so. I hope that we get to talk about a lot of offense all year, Mike. That's my hopes and dreams anyways. But talking about this defense, it seems like we don't really need to place a lot of attention on the defense because it just feels like, A, most of us trust that Leslie Frazier and Sean McDermott, they've got a game plan. It doesn't really change, and it fits how to stop modern-day offenses. So, like, why are we stressing about that side of the ball? But I think looking at that cornerback two position, it's been the storyline all year. They end up waiving Cam Lewis, the former UB football player, and I do find that to be fairly interesting based on a lot of the reports I've seen from beat reporters amongst our peers that he had quite a good camp, so I am surprised to see him go. Having said that, how confident are you in that cornerback two position? We know Levi Wallace had a pretty good camp. Josh Norman's camp got cut short, but he is back from that hamstring injury. If you had to put that confidence level on a Richter scale of 1 to 10, where do you fall?
I say, at the moment, I'll say 6. And the reason I say is, Tre'Davious White gives you a 6, right, automatically.
Yeah.
That second spot is I like Levi Wallace. I like... I love the symmetry of the two of them together, right? You've got the talkative number one pick, all pro on one side. You've got the quieter, unassuming, undrafted guy on the other side. All that is great. And I think Levi is a guy I want on my team, and I think he can play. I'm intrigued by what Josh Norman can bring to them. I love his confidence. But you start to worry about a player, soft tissue stuff, and being on the field. It's a little concerning. It's been that issue for the couple of years, right? Always worried about that other side. I don't think they've got it locked down. I don't think so at all. And it's funny, McDermott said the other day, yeah, I want 10 starting corners. Like somebody was joking about like where you are on how many of these guys you can have. I don't think you can have enough. I think there's a possibility they're still out there looking. I mean, you know, if the Bills are going to be in that spot, could it be another veteran guy that they look at that pops loose on the waiver wire, as I say this, long term? So you do, you know, I don't want to be that guy that just dismisses games, but you do have the Jets week one, and there's going to be a lot of moves to be made if you're bringing somebody in that guy certainly is not contributing in week one with the 5-day waiting period and all that to get in the building. But we are talking about a long season. We are talking about cornerback. So I'm not fully convinced they have it figured out. Tell me you got a healthy Josh Norman. That makes me feel better, but we haven't gotten a chance to see him, and we don't know what his status is going to be starting the season.
Let's move off this roster, Mike, because I think it's polarizing, the situation that happened. Not necessarily the situation, but the player in Miami, Josh Rosen, getting cut and waived by the Miami Dolphins. For me, it was surprising. I know that they were sort of dangling his name out there in the trade market, but considering that Ryan Fitzpatrick, this is likely his last year. That I'm not going to bet that Ryan Fitzpatrick continues playing football, albeit he has done it at a fairly decent high level over the last few years. He's 38 years old. Like, he's getting towards the end. Tua Tagovailoa has had multiple, and I'm saying multiple, ankle injuries, a pretty catastrophic and almost career-ending hip injury, and yet you have a young quarterback who, whatever you think of him, is still on your roster. It seems like they gave up some long-term stability in order to just release a guy to the street. I don't know how much it says to you anyways about what that team and that locker room thinks of Josh Rosen, but it was certainly eye-raising to me.
I just don't think coaches like him. I mean, it's a young quarterback with ability, right? We saw that ability in college. You know, I was at that draft. The Bills obviously took Josh Allen. And I'm standing there listening to Josh Rosen, which didn't seem like, I mean, I know he's a guy who likes to talk and he's like to say things, but I never saw him as a boastful guy.
Yeah.
And he said there was 9 mistakes ahead of me. Okay, I get it. You want to be confident. You want to do that. But he hasn't shown enough, and teams will do anything to see value in a young quarterback. You'll see, you know, and guys keep getting – I mean, remember, you know, Christian Hackenberg got like 3 chances. The guy just couldn't play. And so I look at him and I'm saying, all right, like, is there a reason Brian Flores wouldn't look at this guy and say, all right, is there something there? Does he need to go to some place like Kansas City, where you've got Andy, who always seems to, you know, try to generate something out of these guys? Or, you know, Doug Peterson with the Eagles, they were always looking for a guy. Now, I don't think they would do it now since they drafted Hurts, and you know, they still have, obviously they have Wentz, but they're one of those guys maybe that wants to invest more in a quarterback. But I start to wonder, I go, is this guy just not salvageable? Is there something about him? Because I think if he showed anything, what's the downside of holding on to him as your third quarterback? So now we say this, there a chance they bring him back and put him on the practice? I guess. But I mean, is that your chance to prove something? He just hasn't proved it yet. I'll tell you what, if he does someday get on a roster and excel, it's going to be a heck of a story, because he's just sitting out there for anybody to take again.
Yeah, I like your point a lot about there just has to be something. And, you know, for people like me who still view him as, like, this is the 10th overall pick 3 years ago. You know, like, you're right. Like, Christian Hackenberg, multiple opportunities. Ryan Tannehill didn't get good, quote-unquote, until last year after he was traded away, you know, and after he signed two contracts. So, you know, for me, giving up on a guy this early, that you have to have some kind of red flag about it, because frankly, there's just got to be something that we're not seeing, and I get that. But to your point, it is puzzling. It's a weird thing. It's a weird situation to kind of watch play out.
I could honestly, I know we always throw this out there, we always do, but I would be curious if somebody like Belichick didn't take a flyer on him. Now it is Brian Flores there, and I don't know how much community, only because he just seems like skill set wise the kind of guy they would like. I mean, we saw the accuracy.
Mike, Matt Schaub. Matt Schaub is a backup quarterback in this league.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yes. It is, you know, it is strange the way teams will look at this, but, I believe he's going to get another shot.
I do too.
He just will. There's so many teams that still are just grinding, teams that maybe have an older guy and they're looking for somebody young to develop. Maybe he just develops into a backup and that's fine. And I don't know, maybe he likes being a backup, but we just haven't seen it. And I guess it's going to be interesting to see if anybody does this year, give him another shot.
Hey, I just want to point out, Mike, I very much liked being a backup in college. Not a lot of pressure, especially a quarterback. People are like, oh, he plays quarterback. You know, he must be cool. So I got put in a lot of categories that I probably didn't belong just because, you know, I got to hold the clipboard. I was fine with the
position. Did you have a baseball cap on the sidelines, or did you go helmet?
I went helmet because, Mike, I hope that you know this about me. I'm very much about my swag. So I had my visor on. I had to have the helmet on at all times.
You know, it started the cool backup, and you're too young to know this, but Don Strock with the Dolphins when Marino was the guy. Strock, always tan, hat on the sidelines. He was the most cool, calm guy ever. And he got to play some, but like that to me, when I was a kid, like that was the cool backup quarterback. And he's like clapping for way to go. Way to go, Dan. Keep throwing those passes. So it's a good spot to be in. If you eventually say, this is who I'm going to be, we can all strive to be Chase Daniel and make a
heck
ton
yeah
of money and never play.
He is
the patron saint of backup quarterbacks.
All right, Mike, I appreciate you as always, my friend. I'm looking forward to the season starting, hearing your and your team's takes, by the way. You guys do great work.
Bunch. Yeah.
You do.
I got Jenna Cottrell, Dan Faith. And by the way, for us, especially if you're not in Rochester, if I can put a plug in, it's BuffaloPlus.com, Buffalo Plus on YouTube. Everything Buffalo Plus is really our online presence for all this stuff. And we have a lot of fun with it. And so if you're checking out our stuff between myself, Dan Faith, and Jenna Cottrell, that's where you'll find it.
Great team. Great guy, Mike. I appreciate you as always being so generous with your time, and we'll be talking soon again, my friend.
Yep. I'll keep listening. Looking forward to it.
Awesome. Thanks. Mike Catalano there on the Western Hotline. Quick timeout. When we come back, I've got a really quick unload for the next segment, which we've got Sean McDermott, coming up next here on WGR. All right, me, late to break, couldn't be me. Going to take a quick time out again here, just kind of previewing our three. Sean McDermott, we're going to hear from right out of the gate here. Then Todd Height from Batavia Downs, then Josh Allen. So we've got a full jam-packed hour three. If you missed any of hour two or one, of course, just head to WGR550.com. On-demand audio, that's where you'll find me, Sal, Bruce Exclusive, Mike Tenier, and Mike Catalana, all on WGR550.com. Quick time out, other side. Sean McDermott, Bills head coach, coming up here on WGR.
Baseball is back. And so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.